failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
My name is Dean Becker. Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. Our guests for today will include Dr. Peter Rost, former vice president of Merck Pharmaceutical House, Dr. David Duncan, an epidemiologist and professor at Brown University. But first up, we hear from former Scotland Yard detective, Mr. Eddie Ellison.
Hi, my name is Eddie Ellison. I retired as a relatively senior detective at Scotland Yard, but I was the head of Scotland Yard's drug squad for a matter of 3 years, and in all, I've got 7 or 8 years working the drugs field in London.
Eddie, I'm very proud of the caliber, the level of expertise of the guests that are willing to come on our show. Just last week, we had Gustavo de Grief, the former Attorney General of Colombia, and you, having worked 30 years plus in basically within Scotland Yard, and as their leader at times trying to squelch the flow of drugs, did you ever have much in the way of success?
Well, you know, from my background, and particularly since you've invited me to talk on this, that I'm a legalizer at heart. No, I don't think prohibition can work. What it can do is allow however many officers you're allowed to lead, you can take out some of the worst people in the trade and take out some of the drugs. But the idea of controlling it is just ridiculous.
Yes, sir. There are stories breaking on the news of late about Britain considering the use of injection centers and much ballyhoo about that. Tell us your perceptions on that.
Well, it's certainly, although it's on the news, it's not news as such. What's happened is one of our charitable organizations, the Joseph Rowntree Trust or the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, has just published a report. And in order to look at some of the effects of current drug policy, and the team that they chose to look at it included a representative of the Senior Police Officers Association over here in the United Kingdom, ACPO, the Association of Chief Police Officers, as well as Lady Runciman, who recently, about 2 years ago, headed a report into drug policy in the UK. And one of the things they came out with was that people are suffering a great deal because of heroin addiction, and the use of injection rooms would be beneficial. We'd allow them to bring them within the scope of services and allow people to help them. This isn't new. It was suggested 2 years ago with the Runciman Commission. About a year before that, our Home Affairs Select Committee made that recommendation. Most agencies have been supporting this. It's our politicians that haven't found the political answer to launching it at the moment.
Now, if you will excuse the term, but I see many of these politicians as having, if you will, quote, made their bones by being tough on crime, by being tough on drugs. It's tough for them to back down, is it not? But is there incremental progress being made?
How do you measure that? The organizations that are lining up to look at harm reduction and treatment as opposed to prohibition are growing in number. And they're coming from every sector. From our British Medical Association is making recommendations along those lines. At the other extreme, the Women's Institute, which is a charitable organization of ladies in just about every town and village in the United Kingdom, is suggesting legalization of cannabis and treatment centers for the harder drugs. There is no political party that does not have somebody within it that is suggesting an alternative to prohibition. But the numbers are still small of people willing to speak out. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a large number of politicians that would countenance it in private. But they do have a problem. We have politicians that have lined up to be hard and tough in the crime field and therefore hard and tough in the drug field. And it's going to be very difficult to have a sea change in that. But it is underway. But it's been underway for a decade.
It is incremental at best, I suppose. Now, to me, it seems a no-brainer, if you will, sir, that a politician could make great progress if he were to just dare to say, look, I want to stop our children having easy access. I want to get rid of the violent gangs. I want to destroy the drug cartels and quit funding Osama bin Laden. I want to basically stop overdose deaths. And you know the answer to that, sir. It's the LEAP policy. Regulate.
Yep.
And legalize. Your thoughts, sir. Why can't they gain traction with that thought?
Because they've spent decades, if not centuries, being tough on drugs. And it looks like a soft option, but, you know, you and I will agree that treatment and harm reduction is not a soft option. What we're really doing is taking the power away from the criminals And we're saying to individuals, take responsibility for your own lives. You know, we'll support you, we'll help you, but, you know, let's get a reasonable product there that isn't going to harm you and take the profits away from the criminals. Yeah, it's a logical way forward, but the politicians are very, very scared of it. The moment any politician even hints at it, it used to be that that the national media would lampoon them, but we have a particular newspaper over here, the Daily Mail, that is described as pretty right-wing, but even they have started putting out editorials recently saying it really is time to look at other alternatives. They haven't used the L word or legalization yet, but they are at least saying prohibition is not working. We've got to look at some alternatives, and that traditionally has been the voice of the hardliners. So even the most hardline of our newspapers is now beginning to come around to at least looking at alternatives.
I see other stories coming out that I believe it was the Scottish Police Officers Association basically came out for legalization. It is gaining some traction, huh?
Well, let's put that in perspective. The Police Federation is our trade union of policemen from the rank of inspector downwards. You know, they comprise about 80% of the police service. One of the branches in Scotland put forward a motion to their national conference to debate legalization as a way forward, and it was debated. They took a lot of support with them in the newspapers. In fact, I've probably read 20 to 30 different newspaper articles about their initiative, and I don't think I've seen any that were very critical of them. There is a sea change, but this sea change has been going on for some time, and you know, the Police Federation in the United Kingdom has debated legalization on and off over the last, 14, 15 years. The police service is leading the legalization or the regulation argument in the United Kingdom. It's always police officers. This is not new. I'm just about old enough to remember Report 1968, when there was a commission then, a royal commission, looking at cannabis in those days, and they recommended legalization way back then. And the senior policeman on them was the head of the CID, the head of detectives at Scotland Yard, Peter Brodie, who was happily supporting legalization back in 1968.
I see the stories coming out of Holland about schizophrenia. It circulated through the UK. It went all over the United States that marijuana might lead to schizophrenia. It was time to stop the rethink. It was time to reevaluate. Again, that's just reefer madness, is it not?
Well, let's give Holland 50% of the credit. There were two research projects that came out with the same idea at the same time, and I don't think anybody in the legalization debate or the rationalization debate would argue that not using cannabis is more healthy than using it. And if somebody has a predetermination towards schizophrenia, then it is, whether it's their predisposition that makes them use the cannabis or whether it's the cannabis that triggers the schizophrenia, yeah, there is a greater predominance, but the percentage is so small that it's not worth attacking. Certainly Holland came to that conclusion, as did another research project in New Zealand. But it wasn't new. When they did their early reports, they were suggesting that this was a possibility. And when the newspapers picked up and ran with this story, both those research projects said, well, actually, prohibition doesn't help us one iota. You know, the fact that cannabis, you know, might actually bring on schizophrenia, particularly heavy use in under 14-year-olds, that doesn't argue for prohibition at all. It probably argues more for better control, better education, and keeping the market again away from the criminal supply chain.
I think it's been your observation over the years that it is the U.S. policy. Over here, we don't worry so much about the international treaties. It's more the U.S. Congress and that stance taken, but the U.S. policy impacts the whole world, does it not?
Well, through the United Nations, yes, it does. As soon as the United Nations, any branch of the United Nations, it's not just drug policy, it could be a variety of other aspects of the United Nations, as soon as they say anything that doesn't fit in with the United States foreign policy, then they keep getting reminded that the United States is the major funder of the United Nations, which is totally true. And there's an old English adage, he who pays the piper calls the tune. If they step out of line, then they get threatened. It's as simple as that.
Tell us about the organization you belong to, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Well, let me take no credit for this. This was an organization set up by, let me call it six gentlemen or six officers from the American continent, since one's a Canadian background and the other five are United States background, who got together and argued for a radical new approach. There's long been a belief, you know, if we think the politicians have got their heads in the sand, there's long been a belief that the hardliners are the police service, whereas the police service, law enforcement, are the people that are at the sharp end of this, and they see both the strengths and the weaknesses of prohibition. And people come to different conclusions, as indeed I had. This group came together and formed LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and they put up a website. I saw it about 6 months after they were created and offered my services. I've been banging my head on the legalization argument now for, good heavens, you have to work the math yourself. But the first article I wrote was 1972. I was a legalizer before they gave me command of the drug squad. It caused me no problems, and it didn't cause my officers any problems. Police officers can do beneficial work in the drugs field, but they can't achieve what they said, what the politicians set them out to achieve. So LEAP is simply a voice that brings in the knowledge and experience of the people, the practitioners in the field, and says, look, you know, in England we have the expression the thin blue line. We'll put the thin blue line up to hold against the drugs menace. Well, a thin blue line doesn't work. Now, I can say that in the UK, and the members of LEAP say that in the United States.
Earlier we spoke of the incremental change, slow sea change perhaps. What can the average citizen do? Should they talk to the local constabulary? Should they contact the politicians? How can we hasten the demise of prohibition?
Well, LEAP, a couple of years ago, sent me on a speaking tour in New Zealand, where I was talking, as most LEAP members do, we talked to citizen groups, whatever they are, from Roundtable to Rotary to Institute groups to politicians. And actually, what you're asking the public to do is very, very little. All you're asking them today is say, look, give it a moment's thought. Don't simply pick the tagline that the newspapers and the politicians use. Think about it. We'll give you something else to think about. We'll tell you the other side of the story. Now, we're not crazy. You know, we work in this field, and we work very hard in this field. Just give it some thought. And the next time you open a can of beer, or the next time you have a barbecue, or the next time it comes up when you're chatting to friends, and they say, you know, some stupid person's argued for legalization, just say, whoa, hang on a minute, there actually is an argument there. We don't want the public to start marching and tearing down the capitals and kicking the politicians. What we want them to do is think it through. They've got to come to this conclusion themselves. The whole prohibition argument with politicians running away and the public following. And we wouldn't want that from Lee's point of view either. What we want to do is educate and bring the knowledge to people so they can make their own individual minds up. They can look at both sides of the argument. And in their normal day-to-day lives, when they're talking to their friends, if they're prepared to say, hang on, there's another argument here, there's another side to this story, in due course, the majority opinion will change because it's logical. And let you know, you and I both know that when public opinion changes, the first people to change their minds are the politicians. So let's forget about the politicians. Why keep banging their heads? If we change the public's mind, the politicians will change their mind. They always follow public opinion because they want to get elected. All right, this is Eddie Ellison. I'm finishing now, and it's an absolute pleasure to contribute to the Drug Truth Network.
Law enforcement against prohibition. These men and women have served in the trenches of the drug war as prosecutors, judges, cops, guards, and wardens. They have seen firsthand the utter futility of our policy and now work together to end drug prohibition. Please visit leap.cc.
Next up, we hear from Dr. David Duncan. He's an epidemiologist and professor at Brown University.
Dr. Duncan, we've had you as a guest on our programs many times over the years, and we've talked about the fact that most heroin deaths do not have to occur, that it is the properties, the cut, that sometimes is a contributing factor to those deaths. And despite the fact that these drugs are made by untrained chemists, sold by gangsters, these all hard drugs combined kill less than 1% of the amount killed each year by tobacco and alcohol. Your thoughts on the hypocrisy?
Well, certainly if we outlawed drugs based on their dangers, we wouldn't have considered outlawing marijuana at all. We probably wouldn't have outlawed heroin, but we unquestionably would have outlawed tobacco and alcohol. We simply haven't got policies that have any basis in anything but prejudice. The real dangers of the drugs that are illicit drugs largely come from their illegal status. Because real overdose on heroin occurs either because people don't know how much they're getting, don't know how pure it is, or because the person has been in jail or some situation where they stopped using for a while, goes back to using, and takes the dose that used to be their tolerance dose when their tolerance has gone down and overdoses. And those are rarely fatal overdoses. But most of the heroin-related deaths are because of impurities in the heroin. Those wouldn't be there if it wasn't an illegal drug. If people were buying straight heroin from a prescription pharmacy, they would be experiencing really no problems except constipation, which is the only harmful effect heroin has in any reasonable controlled dosage use.
Okay, I'm Peter Rost. I used to work as a vice president over at Pfizer. That's the largest drug company in the world. And I was actually fired about 6 months ago after I had spoken out in favor of reimportation of drugs and after I also had contacted authorities about what I thought were some illegal actions within the company.
Well, Dr. Rost, I rail each week against the FDA and the pharmaceutical houses. Do you think part of that's justified?
Well, we have an issue potentially today with the FDA getting a big part of their budgets directly from the drug companies through users' fees. And that means resources have been allocated to approve drugs rapidly, which can be a good thing when you have good drugs. At the same time, we don't have necessarily appropriate resources within the FDA allocated to making sure that drugs are safe on an ongoing basis and maybe even pulling drugs off the market when they're proven unsafe. And this has resulted in problems such as the Vioxx situation.
Well, I see you have written many numerous articles for the Huffington Post. And the one that first caught my attention, don't trust your television news. I don't know how else to put it, sir, but that we've been duped on occasion by agents of the government and certainly by some of the processes of the pharmaceutical houses, if you will, bribing of doctors. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Clearly, it's very important when you have a regulatory agency like the FDA that they are objective, that they only have science in mind, and they do what's best for the population, for the health of the population. Unfortunately, we have seen lately during depositions made under oath by senior FDA staffers that this is not how the FDA operates. It turns out that sometimes for religious reasons, for political reasons, the FDA commissioner has pulled the approval of certain drugs or new ways of using drugs because of religious beliefs. And this is obviously a complete violation of the whole separation of powers and how our government is supposed to operate. It's a very scary picture. I mean, I realize we are far from becoming the Ayatollahs of the Iran, but hey, we're walking that same path.
Well, having worked with, as you say, the world's largest pharmaceutical house, you see, I don't trust the whole process because I observe that doctors and pharmacists each year kill about 100,000 people through, you know, bad writing or bad interpretation of a doctor's writing, the improper filling of prescriptions, and yet all illegal drugs kill about 3,000 people per year. There is, in my opinion, a lot of hypocrisy involved. Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think you are right. There is a lot of hypocrisy involved. There is a lot of politics involved, and not everything really makes sense once you start looking at the numbers. Clearly, illegal drugs are illegal usually for a reason, that they're harmful and they are abused. But it's also true that legal drugs can be abused and are abused a lot and can be also used incorrectly by both patients and doctors. And because of the prevalence of legal drugs compared to illegal drugs, the potential for abuse and for problems is even larger with illegal drugs.
Well, I think one of the large problems with the, quote, illegal drugs is that they're made by untrained chemists and distributed by gangsters. Your thoughts on that?
Once again, what's your question?
Well, I was saying that the illegal drugs are made by untrained chemists, diluted with everything from baby powder to laxatives, and sold by gangsters. That's really the problem, isn't it, sir?
Well, it depends on what you mean. If you buy illegal drugs, mean narcotics, I'm sure they are made very often by untrained people, and they probably also can contain all kinds of different stuff. If you talk about illegal drugs as far as drugs that are imported and purport to be regular brand name drugs, yeah, there are problems with those as well, which is the reason I feel the position we have today when we don't regulate and legalize drug importation is really ridiculous, because we're maintaining a Wild West status quo.
Well, you made note of the fact in your writing that over a 10-month period, the Center for Media and Democracy documented the use of 36, quote, video news segments put together by the government. Your thoughts on that, sir? We're being led by the nose at times, are we not?
Yeah, if you are a regular consumer, you really have no idea how manipulated you are. You think you're getting objective news on the television, or at least, well, you think you're getting maybe biased news, but at least it's something that reporters came up with. The truth is, any time any reporter mentions a brand name of anything, most likely he has received a video news release, which is kind of like a taped press release from a company that wants him to mention their product. And very often they use these video news releases unedited, without even telling the audience that these are just really disguised commercials. And they do it because the television stations save money, they look good, so it works. We have this in so many areas in our society where we encounter advertising and commercials that don't really disclose that they are advertising and commercials. And people have no idea when they're being manipulated. I mean, the way our society operates today with the propaganda from big business, Goebbels would have been proud.
Thank you for that, sir. Now, many of us drug reformers, some call us paranoid, but we talk about the reefer madness, the decades-old attack on any who would use these illegal drugs. It continues, whether it's marijuana or heroin. It's a madness that compels the government to spend some $60 billion a year to fight this. And yet, under a controlled marketplace, we would cut down on the overdoses and some of those problems, would we not?
It is. That's possible. Clearly, when you're looking at some drugs that are illegal, they do appear to have the potential, for instance, marijuana, of reducing nausea among cancer patients, which is when they have treatment. And there are some benefits like that, and it is certainly, and I am aware that I think at least one state has legalized the use for certain patients, whereas the federal government has made this illegal. I'm not an expert in that particular area. I would say that my opinion is, again, we should look at the science, what is best for the patient. We should not use politics or religion or something else to make these determinations. We should use science. We should be a science-based society. And quite frankly, I doubt that that is what is taking place.
We are speaking with Dr. Peter Rost, former vice president of the Pfizer Pharmaceutical Company. Dr. Rust, I want to ask, you mentioned in your writing that the pharmaceutical houses sometimes bring patients in to speak to the Congress or to state reps to bend the will of these, quote, experts to get laws passed, to get drug reimbursement. The Drug Czar says that drug reformers use medical marijuana patients in much the same way. Your thoughts on that, sir?
You know, always look at who takes money from whom. and when they're trying to hide it. And reality today is that, you know, the drug companies know if they simply stand up and ask for something, people are going to say, well, you know, you want it for your profit. However, if patients ask for something, it's a different story, and it's something that regulators, politicians will listen to. So to achieve this objective, drug companies very often simply use patient organizations as front organizations. And if the patient organization refuses to participate in this, which I'm sure is very rare, then the drug company may even start their own patient organization, competing with the original one. So they have their tentacles into all of this. I would think, again, I don't know much of the medical marijuana situation. I would imagine that this is not supported by the drug companies because they're not necessarily making money off of this. So I'm not sure where patient organizations there get the funding, if any, to ask for help when they have debilitating nausea and can't function because of their chemotherapy.
Any other thoughts you'd like to relay at this time?
Well, my thought would be for your listeners to simply think for themselves. Don't expect the easily accessible news to be the full story and the correct news, but do some digging on your own and compare different stories. The Internet is a wonderful place to do that, and then make up your opinion, because if you don't do that, you will be manipulated. You will be sold a bill of goods that may not be the truth. You live in a society where propaganda is everything. So do your own research.
Drug prohibition. 90 years of success lead us to this day. Our children pick up the phone and drugs are delivered within the hour, because that's how we like it. Overdose deaths, preventable by a phone call, are assured by paranoia. Yes, we are number one. Violent drug gangs are the scourge of our continent. We insist that their jobs pay so very well. Terrorists turn flowers into million-dollar bankrolls to buy bigger weapons to kill us. So each year, we give them $500 billion to make it so. We are the champions of the world.
Well, no new stations to report this week, but we did get the tinfoil hat award on its way to Karen Tandy's house. Whacking Day is coming to America. October 27th, the last Saturday before Election Day. Craft a piñata or paint a picture of your mayor, your representative, or any elected official. Set up your caricature in the local park. Encourage your friends to swing the bat, hurl the water balloons, or otherwise show their feelings towards these officials, be they Republican, Democrat, or Independent. The Drug Truth Network offers $100 to the city with the most attendees and $100 for the most unique offering of thanks to an elected official. Please visit www.drugtruth.net. For more details. And I am serious. $100 for the city with the most attendees. Sign up as a representative for your town at our website, and we'll give $100 to the person with the best caricature, the best means of expressing their opinion in regards to their elected officials. Please confirm for yourself the truth about this drug war. It is my firm conviction that there is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, or medical data involved. Please visit our website, endprohibition.org. Prohibido es Doc Evilesco.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Guffman.